This is Morgan Beatty bringing you NBC's News of the World. Tonight in the headlines, the big story, the war moves toward a mysterious climax. The 26-day shelling of Con Tien fails to duplicate Dien Bien Phu. Marines hold fast, trade shells, 5-1 with the enemy. Doves and hawks in the Senate rebuke Dove Clifford case. Chief of Staff Wheeler proposes massive bombing of the North. Britain supports U.S. again in the U.N. Capitol Hill, Republicans open their tax attack on the president. Harlingen, Texas, the flood rolls on into Mexico. New York, the New York school strike ends, but who won? Those are the headlines. In a moment, the news.
A boy becomes a man. When? Well, when he becomes a father for the first time, and especially when that first child is a son. It's probably the most important event in his life. So said singer Bobby Darin to our Monitor reporter this week. And he added this.
Wow, it's a very strange, overwhelming sensation, which, in my particular case, did not phase out after he was 6 months old or a year or two or five. It's a constant, and it's a growing constant. And he represents a universe to me.
Well, Mr. Darin will find this is only the beginning of a very memorable time, and incidentally, for a memorable weekend, this is H. Morgan, your Sunday afternoon Monitor host, inviting you to join Bobby Darin, along with Martha Ray, Polly Bergen, Petula Clark, Myron Cohen, Ben Gazzara, Julie Christie, Steve Allen. Yeah, it's a star-studded, fun-filled, fascinating lineup all for you right here on NBC Radio.
Now here is Morgan Beatty with the news.
And the news tonight begins with unmistakable signs of a climax in the war in Vietnam. The nature of the climax is so far unrevealed, but it's indicated by the most concentrated artillery duel in the history of modern warfare at the demilitarized zone. With a new attempt by the North to form a national front in the Viet Cong territory, North Vietnamese soldiers are fighting hard. On that war front, some 3,000 of our Marines are being pounded unmercifully by the leading artillery edge of an enemy force of some 35,000 North Vietnamese. The Marines are comparing the pounding to Iwo Jima and Guadalcanal. The Battle of Dien Bien Phu is also mentioned. That's the one that knocked France out of Southeast Asia. But right there, the similarity to Dien Bien Phu stops. The enemy target for 26 days has been the not-too-high ground at Con Tien, a few miles south of the demilitarized zone. War correspondent Richard V. Oliver, with the Marines, says morale is high, even though the fighting men have not had a shower or a hot meal in weeks. Their shoes, in some cases, are rotting off. All have long beards. Marine observers, however, point to a different story statistically and in strategy. Shell for shell, we're giving the enemy 5-1. In the most recently reported 24-hour period, the North Vietnamese poured 1,000 rounds into our Marines. We sent back 5,700 rounds. They killed two men, wounded 202. Incidentally, one United States sailor was killed aboard the destroyer Mansfield, two others wounded. 63 Marines have been killed in the 26-day battle. But 2/3 of our wounded are given first aid and go back into line. Only 1 out of 100 of the wounded taken to hospitals has died. This is the greatest tribute to modern American medicine under battlefield conditions ever. The enemy is known to be hurting far worse, but no casualty figures are yet known. Further, Marine staff officers explain that the communists are trying to make a Dien Bien Phu debacle out of Con Tien, but they have made a very poor choice. Returning to the home front, the spectacle on the floor of the Senate today was most unusual. When Senator Clifford P. Case of New Jersey, a dedicated Dove, took the floor, he charged that the president had abused the Tonkin Gulf Resolution of 1964 and had not told the people the truth. In that resolution, Congress authorized the chief executive to use any means to repel attack and prevent aggression. The Johnson administration's handling of the war, he said, had produced a crisis of confidence. Immediately, Senator Mike Mansfield, like Case, a Dove, charged a personal attack had been made on the president, and there is evidence that the president has consistently told the truth. Hawk, Senator John Stennis of Mississippi, charged Senator Case was inadvertently, at least, giving aid and comfort to the enemy, but it remained for Senator Everett Dirksen of Illinois, Senator Case's own party leader, to deliver the most stinging counterattack. He waved a copy of the Case speech over his head and accused the New Jersey senator of belly aching. There are enough lawyers here in the Senate, said Senator Dirksen, to know the language of the Tonkin Resolution, and they ought not to belly ache afterwards if it rises rises up and hits them in the face. Senator Case, sarcastically but weakly, thanked Senator Dirksen of Illinois for straightening him out. A changing attitude of dove-like delegates to the United Nations was reflected today in a speech by George Brown, Foreign Secretary of Great Britain. Mr. Brown felt sure enough of his position to defy a sizable majority of his own Labour Party in England. He refused to endorse an American peace or surrender at any price, while also calling for an end to the bombing of the North. He said this: "There should be immediate peace talks, with or without an end to the fighting. It is tragic that North Vietnam has spurned the many opportunities offered to negotiate." In short, he was saying, why must America surrender to an ultimatum? Why not talks if the communists truly want peace, if they're not, in fact, aggressors, as the Americans say? And in Washington today, the Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman, General Earl Wheeler, promised Congress an investigation into the possibilities of bombing North Vietnamese population centers after warning civilians in advance that such a bombing may be given. As for the enemy plans and intentions, Dennis Warner in Reporter magazine today says the North Vietnamese have switched from terror tactics in the countryside to a new campaign by radio to touch the nationalist nerve of South Vietnamese citizens. This apparently tries to shore up the problem of Ho Chi Minh's loyalty. He has never been a Vietnamese nationalist. He was a charter member of the Communist International of France. He has just recently posed as a Vietnamese nationalist. The North Vietnamese campaign is designed to meet the militant South Vietnamese Buddhist plans to march in opposition to the new Thieu government of the South. Something very definitely is in the wind. At least a change of major proportions is building, and it could be a telling climax in the war. I'll be back in a moment with Republicans and Taxes and Mr. Johnson and more News of the World.
And best personal regards. Sincerely, etc., etc. Now read that back to me, Miss Jones. Miss Jones.
When you can't afford to be dull, sharpen your wits with No-Doze. No-Doze Keep Alert tablets or new chewable mints, safe as coffee, help you become more naturally alert to people and conditions around you.
Sharpen your wits with No-Doze. No-Doze keeps you alert.
Again, Morgan Beatty.
Now more news but direct report, the tax battle of 1967. Here is Richard Harkness, NBC News correspondent in Washington.
House Republicans laid down the political gauntlet to President Johnson, slash non-military spending by upwards of $13 billion, or face a GOP fight on his plan to raise income taxes 10%. The challenge was put to the White House by Representative Frank Bull of Ohio, the ranking Republican on the Appropriations Committee.
The president has said that we must increase taxes. But I insist that non-war expenditures must be cut before any more tax increases are considered.
Bo will offer the mandatory spending cut proposal before the Appropriations Committee in a closed-door session tomorrow. Bo's resolution would require a $5 billion slash at least based on the president's original budget for this fiscal year. Under the administration's latest projected spending, the cut could approach $13 billion. Committee action is uncertain, but the vote can be close. This is Richard Harkness, NBC News at the Capitol.
Next, the flood rolls on into Mexico. Here is John Dancy, NBC News correspondent in Houston, Texas.
The focus of rescue efforts along the Rio Grande River shifted back to the American side tonight, to Harlingen, where the water rose steadily as a flood crest moved down the stream. A tuberculosis hospital evacuated 150 patients this afternoon, loading them aboard helicopters and trucks as the water rose. Harlingen, a city of 41,000, is actually 15 miles away from the river. But 2 days ago, a flood control dam broke and water swept down the Arroyo Colorado, flooding 800 homes. 5,000 people have been evacuated from their homes in Harlingen. Today, trucks dumped compressed auto bodies into the breach in the dam to try and stop the flood, but the water continued to rise. On the Mexican side of the river, Air Force and Coast Guard helicopters continue to airlift food to isolated villages. One town, Zacatecana, has 900 people who had been almost without food since the town was isolated 10 days ago. Today, an Army helicopter supplied them with 120 bags of food. The flood crest is moving steadily downstream, and the Rio Grande is expected to be out of its banks in Brownsville on Thursday. John Dancy, NBC News, Houston.
And now, around the world briefly, Moscow, the ruling Central Committee of the Communist Party, tonight ordered wage increases, pensions, and vacation for millions of Soviet workers and farmers. They will mark the 50th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution. All will become effective on January the 1st. It was a most eventful Central Committee meeting. The Soviet Union at that meeting plans to increase its published defense budget by 7 to 1%, 10% for 1968. That was a report by informed Russian sources after the meeting. And Alexander N. Shalapin, long regarded as a future top man in the Soviet Union, lost his key post as secretary of the Russian Communist Party when the Central Committee met. Tijuana, Mexico, the death toll from a mysterious mass poisoning affecting mostly children rose higher today. Scientists worked to discover the killer agent. Most of the people became ill after eating bread and milk. 13 persons have died. 200 persons are in hospitals, some in critical condition. Two of the deaths were reported today. The outbreak began Monday when hundreds of children in the Mexican border city of 265,000, that is Tijuana, were hit by vomiting and nausea. Doctors suspect that some chemical agent has caused the illnesses, but they cannot prove it. Hong Kong, China, announced tonight it's closing its embassy in Tunis in North Africa following a bitter dispute with the Tunisian government. Seattle, Bishop James A. Pike of the Episcopalian Church withdrew his demand for a heresy trial today when the church's House of Bishops voted overwhelmingly to change church law and make a trial virtually impossible to initiate. Johnstown, Pennsylvania, former President Dwight Eisenhower called today for higher taxes and less federal spending, particularly on the United States space program. And then there's the story of the New York school strike. It's over, but who won? I'll be back with that story in a moment.
This is Dorothy Gordon speaking. There's so much talk about space and the moon. How often we hear the question, why go to the moon? Suddenly, governments, scientists, oceanologists are talking about the ocean. Why underwater research? The United States government is developing sea grant colleges. Fairleigh Dickinson University is building a marine biology laboratory in St. Croix, the Virgin Islands. Share an experience with me. At the dedication of the laboratory, I went under the sea. Students were with me. We were transported into a new world, a world of fantastic beauty, rich in minerals, oils, vegetable life, fish proteins that can feed millions of people, new medicines to help preserve life. How will cities be built under the sea? What part does the shark play in cancer research? Here, young people and the eminent scientist oceanologist, Dr. Milner Schaefer, discuss the ocean and the bounties it offers for the welfare of humanity. Check this station for time and day of the Dorothy Gordon Youth Forum.
With a closing story, Morgan Beatty.
As we were saying, the New York school strike is over, but the question is still with us, who won? Here is Paul Friedman, NBC News correspondent in New York.
After 5 days of negotiations, the New York Board of Education and the Teachers Union have succeeded in writing down the exact terms of the verbal understanding they reached last week. It was more than just wording that forced the teachers' walkout into a third week. The union wanted more than higher salaries. It wanted certain matters of educational policy written into the contract. The school board's position was that it was perfectly all right for the union to discuss school policy, but it was not proper to write school policy into a contract. In the end, it appears that the union did make inroads on policy matters. Today, union officials said they got written agreement on how $10 million is to be used in specialized programs for underprivileged children, plus agreement on smaller class sizes and the treatment of children who disrupt classes. Union leader Albert Shanker denied that the union was taking over the role of making policy, and he said that such a day probably would never come. Thus far, there has been no comment from the school board. Paul Friedman, NBC News, New York.
Time will tell whether the traditional American position on education through law has been altered by the New York City contract. Time alone will tell. And that's the news of the world. Until tomorrow, this is Morgan Beatty, NBC News, New York.
This is Dr. Joyce Brothers. Merrill Muller, Chet Huntley, and I are heard each weekday with emphasis on NBC Radio.